TechEd. My name is Mark Mortimore. I'm going to be joined on stage today by my colleagues Santosh, Guru, and Kent. And what we're going to do is walk through how to architect and implement hybrid integration solutions with BizTalk Server and BizTalk Azure BizTalk Services. And to get started, I want to talk about some of the strategy and bring folks together in the room to understand what it is we're going to be covering today and provide some context for the demos that we'll be presenting today. We actually had a different set of slides earlier in the week. If you downloaded those slides are great references for you to take home. And if there's any questions, please follow up with me. But what we decided is, over the week, what we heard from you is, hey, more show, less tell. So we took a lot of the graphical slides, which were really pretty, condensed those out of the presentation that we'll be showing you today, and we added in 5 demos for the presentation. And I'll cover how those demos structure our presentation after we go through some more background information. So the first thing that I want to reinforce in the presentation today is that most of you today are driving integration on premises. That integration involves BizTalk Server. Right now, we're announcing the availability of BizTalk Server 2013 R2. We've just released R2 to manufacturing. And so we'll have that available to you in your language in a short time. We want you to know and take away one of the messages from our presentation today is that you, and if you're a partner, you can tell your customers to upgrade now with confidence. We've implemented a lot of standards and platform support to accelerate vertical solutions, and we've maintained backwards compatibility of our solutions, enabling you to move forward with a minimum of friction. We've also enabled you with new interfaces to allow you to extend your solutions more easily to Azure. We also have great abilities to enhance your development and test experience in the cloud. By developing and testing your integration solutions in the cloud, you don't need to rewrite your applications. You're able to use the cloud economics on Azure. If you're an MSDN subscriber, your development and test rates are dramatically reduced over production, enabling you to have great cost efficiency for development and test of your integration solutions leveraging the Azure infrastructure. We also clear up your infrastructure capacity and allow your development teams to provision in minutes and free up the IT team from having to dedicate machines for development and test, as well as freeing up the IT team from provisioning those instances on behalf of developers. So really turning over the power from the IT team and really enabling the IT team to empower the developers to be more agile. We're also encouraging our customers to evaluate the extension scenarios. Once you're current on-premise, a lot of the Azure capabilities really light up. Azure BizTalk Services enables hybrid extensions of your current and on-premises BizTalk Server deployments. And what we're finding is a lot of customers are taking a look at EDI, or Internet of Things applications, or business-to-business or partner integration scenarios that they can move into the cloud or perhaps that don't exist on-premises today and extend that capability that's currently running on-premises into the cloud. And we're also seeing a lot of customers evaluating new greenfield opportunities and saying, hey, you know, I'd really like to begin my integration solution in the cloud to embrace all of these powerful external connection capabilities. So integrating on-premise is on the foundation of BizTalk Server 2013 R2 on-premises, and we're very committed to driving that platform forward. BizTalk Server 2013 R2 in IaaS on Azure enables you to accelerate your development and test in the cloud. And Microsoft Azure BizTalk Services enables you to extend your solution into the cloud or develop new integration scenarios leveraging the Azure Cloud Services. We have a strong release cadence that we announced in November. Scott Guthrie and Vivek Dalvi presented this. The videos are currently available on Channel 9. We talked about major BizTalk server releases in alternate years. So we released 2013 and 2013. Now it's 2014, we're releasing R2. We'll be looking at 1 year intervals to release either a major release or an R2 release of the on-premises version of BizTalk server. We're also doing cumulative updates every quarter for these on-premises solutions, enabling you to update your solutions. And we're doing Windows or Microsoft Azure BizTalk services refreshes every 3 months. So as I mentioned before, we're announcing BizTalk Server 2013 R2, and we're encouraging partners and customers to begin the process of preparation for upgrade to the new version of BizTalk server on premises now. There's a lot of powerful capabilities enabling you to connect to the cloud, improving performance, simplifying your experience, and providing support for the latest platforms and standards, including Windows Server 2012 R2, the latest versions of Visual Studio, and these powerful platform capabilities enable some very strong scenarios, including Azure PAC integration scenarios. So BizTalk Server 2013 R2 is available now. And rather than talk all the detail on this slide, I'm going to save a few minutes and have Guru show you what's new in R2 in a demonstration. I also want to mention we have the versions of BizTalk Server 2013 R2 available to support the scenarios that you need to drive your production applications, whether that's development, whether that's a branch scenario, whether that's a standard or enterprise edition. Those editions are going to be available to help you move forward on BizTalk Server 2013 R2. We have some strong perspectives that have been published by analysts in the community. And so if you're interested in seeing the perspectives of Gartner, we've created a friendly URL here that'll allow you to access that information quite easily. And basically, to summarize his point of view, he's saying that Microsoft has a very strong integration platform and that the customers using BizTalk server on premises today should very seriously consider moving forward with their platform integration solutions on Microsoft. We also have a new Forrester report that came out fairly recently, earlier this year, and we've created a friendly URL as well for that. And again, these are in the presentation today and enable you to see the information that analysts are sharing with the community regarding their perspectives on Microsoft's integration capabilities. As I mentioned, we have strong demos today, and before I hand over the microphone to Guru, I just want to position how these demonstrations work together and kind of chart out for you where we're going so that you understand. So the first thing we're going to talk about is what's new in R2 and show you some of the new capabilities in our on-premises product. Our second demonstration, we're going to be talking about how you can do your development and test in the Azure cloud, whether that's to be deployed ultimately on-premise or to be deployed in the cloud. Development and test in the cloud is a powerful alternative for you, and we want to show you how that alternative can empower and accelerate and as well as reduce the costs of your development and test. The third demonstration is fourth and fifth demonstrations are actually going to be focused on integration scenarios, hybrid integration scenarios. So our first is going to be hybrid connections. It's a new, fast, easy, and secure way of creating a connection between an Azure service, like a web service or a mobile service, and an on-premise data store. Our second demonstration is going to be how BizTalk Services enables hybrid integration scenarios. And our third demonstration will show the interconnectivity between BizTalk Server and BizTalk Services enabling hybrid integration scenarios. So with that roadmap of our demonstrations and that quick kickoff, fasten your seatbelts and let's jump into the demos today. So handing over the microphone to my colleague Guru, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark. Good morning, everybody. All right, let's take a quick look at what was in, what is there in BizTalk 2013 R2. So as Mark was alluding, we are on an annual release cycle with BizTalk Server. Historically, this product has been on an 18 to 24 month release cycle, but now we are formalizing it to be on an annual release cycle. Server 2013 was launched the mid of calendar year 2013. Now we are coming up with an R2 version for this. So what is R2 release? I just want to set some context on what do we mean by R2 here. This is a minor update to a existing product. So the goal of this release is more about being platform compat, because Windows and SQL are also on an annual release starting last year. So sitting at the top of the application stack, BizTalk need to be compliant with everything else underneath it. So the biggest improvement that you would see is platform compatibility. And that is a very important one for BizTalk, because whenever people upgrade Windows or people upgrade SQL, that is when they think about upgrading the application stack. You don't upgrade BizTalk in silo. It is always in consortium with upgrading your other infrastructure components. So that's one of the reasons why we have platform compat as our cornerstone. And the second improvements are all functional improvements on existing features. We are not introducing new features in R2. And we want to make sure that we are always backward compatible with the current release version. So in Server 2013, we introduced a range of new adapters, some of them being WebRTC of REST adapter and service bus connectivity. So in R2, you will see improvements to that with support for JSON, because when we introduced REST, the biggest feedback from the community was like, hey, now I can use REST protocol, but how do I use JSON payload on it? So now we have a native JSON support, and we will see a quick demo of that. And then we also had introduced a new SFTP adapter in Server 2013. So R2 introduces a whole lot of improvements on the SFTP adapter. I don't think that I can show a demo of most of that, because SFTP is still SFTP for most people. And the last part is service bus. When we launched Server 2013 last year, service bus was available only on the cloud. So the adapter was created for service bus on the cloud. Then there was subsequently a service bus on-prem also available. So with the introduction of R2, we are providing support for on-prem service bus connectivity also. The improvement was relatively a simple one, but the impact is significantly big. So let's talk about that quick impact. And the other major improvement that you see here is on the B2B side. That's the business-to-business side of it. BizTalk has always been a very strong player in this space, where it is based on the EDA stack, but it is also specific to multiple verticals. And last year, we saw a big uptake in the healthcare market because of the lots of changes going on in that particular market. And most of the feedback that we heard from customers since the launch of 2013 was with regard to the HL7 support in BizTalk, and support for new standards in HL7, and improvements specific to MLLP adapter, which is the native one for HL7. So most of these improvements that you see here came directly as feedback from customers using Server 2013. So that's why you see a lot of improvements in that HL7 area. So we will be, the demos today, we will be focusing mostly on the JSON support and the service bus on-prem support. And we are also introducing a new feature called BizTalk Health Monitor, which came from our support team. I'll show you that. So it's a lot more easier to show than to talk about that. So with relation to JSON support, it's not showing up yet. So what we have with JSON support here is you should be able to, most of the Bistock development process, if you have been following that, has been just a wizard-driven thing. So you, it is a schematized, it is a schema-based system. That means it needs to understand what is the payload and convert it into an XML schema so that the rest of the Bistock ecosystem, such as your mapping, your orchestration, everything else, can understand that message in a native way. So we took the same cue that we had with flat file processing in Bistock. That means we take a flat file instance, create a XSD schema for that, and then consume that flat file. We took the same example or the same standard here. And if you go to a new Bistock project, I can right-click here and say add new item. You see this thing called JSON schema wizard. It's very similar to your flat file wizard. I can create a new JSON schema and give an instance somewhere here. That's my input JSON schema, and I can input JSON, and I can give a root node name. Let's call it as Tech8 demo. What this did is it created a JSON schema from an XSD schema from a JSON instance. So let me show that instance to you. This is a very simple JSON instance. We read this instance and create an XML schema out of this. Why is this important? Because for the rest of the Bistock project system, it needs everything in XML format. So this is the only place where I'm taking the JSON input. From there on, inside Bistock, it's all standard XML. So now I can use this inside the scope of my orchestration, inside the scope of my map or pipeline, wherever I want, without having to relearn anything within Bistock. And to show that, I've created a rather complex orchestration. So, I'll tell you what this orchestration does. So here it's a, I have a very simple web service, which has multiple interfaces. One is get sales order by a specific ID, and update a sales order, post a new sales order, those kind of stuff. All that this web service does is it takes input and updates a backend SQL server. So now to consume this web service as it is, I'm not modifying anything in this web service. To consume this web service as it is, I have this orchestration which allows me to take in multiple formats of data. So I can take a sales order information and send it to a SQL server. So if you look at it, it's a very straightforward and a simple one, just that it looks complex. It can take three possible types of input, and it can go through three possible routes and send call three different endpoints on your web service. That's pretty much what it does. But now I'm taking this orchestration and making it available as a REST endpoint so that somebody can post a JSON message through to that REST endpoint. So let us see a quick demo of how this works. And before I go there, I can also show you in Bistock server. I've created like two different receive locations. So if you go through this receive location, it is just a regular web HTTP endpoint. And I'm creating a JSON send as my send pipeline. So what we have here is a regular encoder and a decoder, which is using the JSON.NET library. So it's a publicly available library that was actually created by the community. And we have extended it for purposes of Bistock. And now it's available back to the community. So it's a JSON.NET library that we have taken to create an encoder and a decoder. That means I can receive a JSON message and I can send back a JSON message, but in between it's all .NET object. So if we configure on this. So this was the adapter that was introduced in Server 2013. This is the regular REST adapter that was introduced in Server 2013. And here I'm calling get sales orders as one of my endpoint, right? So that's the only operation that I'm calling. So now I'm just going to use Fiddler and do a get sales order. Let us do a get sales order first. Execute on this. So it is calling the get sales order back from SQL, and it is returning me a JSON message. And it says I have one item. Right, so if I go to my backend SQL server, I should see only one item there. Right, so this is the data that I have, so I just see that one here. So what we did here is we posted a request from a web client to an endpoint that was expecting a XML message. And from that XML message, I converted it back to JSON. It received an XML message, converted it back to JSON to send to the JSON web service, got back the response back. So that's pretty much what this one did. So now I can do the same thing with, I can call any operations, like if the web service is exposing a couple of different options here, right? So it is doing get sales order by a specific ID, or place an order. So let us try to place a new order here. Go back to Fiddler and compose that. So I'm taking a new instance here. And I'm placing a new order here, right? So let me say execute this. Let's get returned a 500 error. It's not a put, it's a post. So it says I placed a new result and it's just one record. So if I go back to my SQL, I should see two records now. So now I'm able to, what does this allow us to do? That means I can take an existing business process. I haven't modified anything in my business process, or I did not modify anything in my web service. But now I could take that and expose it as a JSON endpoint, which can be consumed from my mobile applications or from my tablet devices and those kind of things. Which just generally does a very simple post like this. It does an update or it does a get, those kind of things. So those are the most common scenarios where you'll be using the REST protocol with a JSON payload. Yes, please. Yes. If you look at these, the update post that I did, it is a JSON receive, right? So I can receive as well as send. All right, so that was a very quick demo of one minor functionality that can have a bigger impact in your regular business process, because most of the BizTalk payload that you see, it is exposing your on-prem existing assets that you already have, either in the form of a business process or in the form of an LOB system or in the form of a web service or additional data services. It is exposing those things using multiple different protocols. So one of those protocols is REST and JSON. The second one that I wanted to show you today was about connectivity to on-prem service bus. So let me give you a quick thought on why is it relevant and why is it important for BizTalk customers to know about service bus on-prem. So service bus is a very, there are two types of messaging pattern that you can think of. So BizTalk servers today supports a very powerful PubSub-based system. That means you receive a message, it has to be published somewhere, it has to be persisted there. Then you have a known subscriber that comes and picks up from that system. So that is a regular PubSub mechanism. There is an alternate messaging pattern where you can see that incoming message, I have a known type of that, and it has certain promoted properties saying that, hey, these are my properties. And there are known set of subscribers who are just filtering based on those incoming message properties. So that means I'm not persisting it anywhere before routing. I receive the message and I route it, and that endpoint is the persistence point. So there's a difference between the two in the fact that if I am routing from one message to, like, let's say 1,000 different subscribers, that means I'm going to publish it once and I'm just going to give 1,000 pointers to 1,000 subscribers. So the BizTalk PubSub, which is based on the message box pattern, it's very powerful there. But if I have to select one out of those 1,000, I'm not going to select or send to all 1,000, but I'm going to select to one out of these 1,000 possible endpoints. It's easier to send through this routing rather than filtering through that. So with the introduction of service bus on-prem, you have that capability in addition to what you already had with PubSub. So this is not an either or. You can have this plus that on the same box. How is it different from MSMQ? In case of MSMQ, the one who is posting is they're sending with a specific label, and you'll have only one that one property to use. But here, you could have multiple properties, and you could have different types of subscribers that you can change on the fly, right? So you have the ease and use of MSMQ in terms of as a simple messaging protocol, but also the routing capabilities, very similar to how BizTalk would do if it was a pure routing system, right? So now that you have both of these capabilities available in one environment, how can BizTalk developers make use of that, right? So the easiest and most common scenarios that I see is store and forward. BizTalk as a PubSub engine is not geared for store and forward mechanisms. That is, you receive like 10,000 messages today, and your SAP system is going to be available only over the weekend. You don't want to be piling up your message box with those messages for the entire week, which could be affecting your other applications, because message box is a shared resource. So I can forward these messages to a queue-based system and subsequently deliver it from that queue rather than clogging up my message box. That store and forward is a very common scenario. The other one is my upstream system is sending at a much higher rate than the rate at which my downstream system can consume. So the easiest way to do that is you receive it and just forward it to a queue. And whenever the downstream system is available, you can process it. That means I'm not still clogging up my message box. So these are all messaging patterns that as developers that you can think through as to how do I use this, both these systems hand in hand together. So the demo here, it's a very simple one, but I wanted to explain you the impact of this pattern. So the demo, it's a very simple one. That is, I'm just receiving a message and sending it, promoting a particular property and sending it to message service bus, where service bus has a subscriber based on that property. So the couple of things that you wanted to take away from the demo is, how does BizTalk do that promotion, which is using the standard property schema promotion, and the adapter itself has a configuration where it says, okay, what is the property schema that you want to use? So it takes an entire set of collection of properties that you want to promote, and you can have different subscriptions within service bus for each of those properties that are being promoted. So I'm using that standard service bus explorer that our friends in the CAT team had created. So here I have just one queue called receive credit rating, and I have one subscription for all messages to be received. So where the condition is 1 equals 1, that means I'm going to receive all messages. And I have one other subscription only for a credit rating agency called A. And there the promoter property that I'm looking for is agency name equals agency A. So I'll show you a very simple sample of that message that I have. These demos are intentionally simple. I didn't want to complicate these messages, demos, because if people want to try it out for learning purposes, I just wanted to keep it intentionally simple. So all that this one has is an agency name called agency A and some rating. So it's a very simple message. And if I send this message, I expect this to be routed to that particular queue, right? So let's see how does this work. And we will go through that BizTalk implementation of that. So somebody picked it up and sent it here, right? So now let us go through here and see if this guy received it. So from 6, it went up to 7, right? So now let me send it again just to make sure that everybody sees this. If you look at this, one of the routing that it got here was the property called agency value equals agency A. You see that? So if I sent something else, like agency B, this guy will not get it. So how am I promoting that property is the interesting part here. If I go to BizTalk, this is a pure messaging scenario. So go into BizTalk SB demo. So I have a receive location to receive from this and a send port to send to service bus, right? So if we go to that service bus queue, I'm using the adapter called service bus messaging and I'm using an XML transmit. If I configure that, I have a property schema here. So this property schema is promoting that particular agency as a regular BizTalk property, and service bus is subscribing to that one. So if I send a agency B message now, so now I don't expect that to show up here in CRA, right? In CRA, currently I have 7 messages. I don't have any, but that guy will show up here because this is subscribing to everything, right? It's 1 equals 1. So let us do that. Let us see if it showed up here. Let's resubmit this. Clear log. Exception thrown. Why? Still says message count is 11. So now weak messages. Something went wrong with that. Anyway, so but the message came here, but the message doesn't come here. So the scenario is that I can have different filters based on a collection of properties that BizTalk is sending it out. So the demo itself is very simple, and we wanted to keep the adapter and configuration also very simple, but the pattern is very powerful. As developers, I want you to walk away with pattern and not just about the implementation side of it. So whether we do it on the cloud or we are doing it on-prem, the adapter is exactly the same. It works with just the change in the namespace of the configuration. So while configuring the service bus endpoint here in my adapter, I just need to change the namespace, and I can talk to either service bus on-prem or service bus on the cloud. So here I'm talking to SB Guru BTS JSON, which is an on-prem this thing. If I just point it to cloudapp.net, it will be pointing to a service bus on the cloud. So the adapter is exactly the same and the behavior is exactly the same. The question is like, are we redistributing service bus on-prem? No, we are not redistributing service bus on-prem. It is part of Windows Server. It is available as a free download. So we are not redistributing it as part of BizTalk. Correct. So whether we are doing it from BizTalk cloud services or we are doing it from BizTalk server, all you need is a namespace change here. No, JSON schema is used in the context of BizTalk. So it is part of BizTalk server 2013.02. And as I said, it's a open source thing that we have contributed back to the community. So if you go download json.net, you have all the functionality, but just not in the form of a wizard, but the API set is still available. You can generate a JSON, you can give a JSON instance and still generate an XSD using that library. So now I want to introduce you to another new functionality that we are introducing with 2013 R2 called BizTalk Health Monitor. So this is, most of you might be familiar with the message box viewer that we had with earlier versions of BizTalk. We took a different view of that because it was not just about viewing into the message box, but it was also about the comprehensive view of your BizTalk health environment. So what we are doing here is giving you a quick snapshot as a BizTalk administrator. So this is something that is hosted within the BizTalk admin console itself. So if you expand on this, once you know, the first time when you install BizTalk, it allows you to configure where your archive settings is, and then it allows you to configure for the first time some of these type of messages that you want to monitor. So what's what is going on your SQL server? Do you want to monitor specific things to your BRE, specific things about your EDI? What's going on with your adapters? You can configure every one of these. So if your environment does not use EDI, you don't want to be monitoring that part. If your environment is using BRE extensively, you want to know what's going on with those policies, how many times those policies are being called. So you can monitor at every level, and you can also send notifications over email. You can just say, hey, whenever I get alerted, I want this to be sent as an email to me. And you can schedule as to when you want this to be monitored on an everyday basis or a weekly or an hourly basis. And you can also record your performance activity. So the reason why this is important is because this came from our support folks. So people who see complex support in support issues almost on an everyday basis. So they were the ones who came up with this idea. And they said that if I'm monitoring an environment that has, like, let's say, 4 BizTalk servers, I want to get performance logs from all 4 of them for a specific category of an issue. Like, let's say if I have orchestrations around that are throwing some high memory scenario, I want to be monitoring all Xlang instances on all 4 machines, not just on 1 machine. So by just configuring this one and say I'm connecting to this BizTalk group, so from there it will figure out how many host instances are there, and will also figure out whether these hosts are configured to run your Xlang instances or not, and then automatically add the appropriate performance counters. So you have everything available in one quick view. And if you want to know what's going on with your DTA database, and here I see a big red because my SQL agent is stopped. Right, I intentionally stopped my SQL Server agent. So that means it is showing me a big red. So now my BizTalk administrator or my SQL administrator, when they see a big red, at least they will know that, hey, the SQL agent is supposed to be running here and what happened with this. And if you, behind the scenes, these are actually some queries that that are run to show how this is being executed. So you can see the configuration here. You can see what are the various artifacts that you have here. And most importantly, these log files are also saved. So you can go to a specific date and say, okay, show me that log file here. And you can share this log file with anybody. This is your regular MBV kind of a report. So you can share this log file with your support folks or your Microsoft support team and say, hey, this is what my log is looking at. And the new other one that I found interesting was this performance activity. So here, this is specific to your BizTalk configuration. You can say, show me all the performance counter related to my BizTalk process, or show me only those scenarios where I'm throttling. So show me all the performance counters that are specific to my orchestration. So the support team worked on identifying only those counters that are relevant to that particular issue. So instead of collecting everything and figuring out what to do with that, it collects only those things from all the machines. If you have four machines in your environment, it automatically gets it from all the machines. So this, I find it pretty useful, especially given the complexity of most of the BizTalk environments. So these are the 3 improvements that I wanted to showcase today. One was about JSON, the other one was about service bus adapter, and the third one is about BizTalk health monitor. So the takeaway that I want you to have here is that R2 is an incremental build over 2013. And it is important for you to think about upgrading to R2 for a couple of reasons. One big reason being that most of your Windows Server 2008 based environments are hitting an end of life on Windows Server and SQL Server. And BizTalk Server 2013 and 2013 R2 are the ones that are supporting Windows Server 2012 and Windows 2012 R2. The current version of Windows Server is Windows Server 2012 R2 and SQL 2014. So this current version of BizTalk will be the one that will be supporting that configuration, that is Windows Server 2012 and SQL 2014 and VS 2013. Yeah, I think I got all the acronyms right. So, so this is the, that's one big reason, because the platform update is a critical one, because it is following through that annual cycle now. It is not going through that 5-year, 10-year thing, which we are usually used to. And you don't have to worry about breaking changes. These are all incremental changes. So it's a lot more easier for you to think about your update cycle rather than planning it for 6 months and implementing it over a year. If it worked on your 2010 environment or if it worked on your 2013 environment, it will work on your R2 environment. Right? So you don't have to, it's an in-place upgrade both for 2010 and 2013. And it's a lift and shift for your previous versions of desktop. Right? So you can do an export MSI and import MSI, and you can use that application in its current form. But for all new applications, you can use the latest and greatest adapters. Right? So let's quickly move forward with this one. So what is it? Machine one, is it? That one is one? The PowerPoint? Okay. So let's also introduce quickly about IIS and this thing. What's going on with IIS? So in recently, MSDN introduced Developer Edition for Visual Studio, available on for all MSDN subscribers. Bistrock introduced availability of Bistrock server images on IIS last year, early last year, but it was not specific to MSDN. So why is it important for being specific to MSDN was you had to bring your own Visual Studio earlier. When in the past MSDN images, in the past IIS images, we could not redistribute Visual Studio. But now Visual Studio is available as part of MSDN subscription. So now it makes it all the more interesting for dev and test scenarios, because you have, at the click of an image, click of a button, you have a fully configured or fully installed Bistrock environment with Bistrock Server 2013 and soon Bistrock Server 2013 R2 and SQL Server with the current build of SQL Server, SQL 2012 and SQL 2014. And Windows Server images. So it's a ready-to-use image that you can just get up and running with the click of a button. I'll show you a quick preview of what we have on IIS today. HTTP://manage.windows-azure.com. I'm just signing into my MSDN subscription using Hotmail. So you go to click new from gallery, and I choose filter it on MSDN available subscriptions. So you see Bistrock Server Developer Edition here. So this developer edition of Bistrock includes everything that is required for you to do your dev and test. And Kent will also be showing some more automation scripts, which we use for from where you can automatically deploy, you can create an image, you can start and stop an image, you can do a complete build test pass on that. So he will show some automation scripts around that. The takeaway for IIS that I would like to reinforce is that this is an environment that you should think about for all your dev and test activities. Actually, all of my demos today that I'm showing are running on IIS machines. So we see IIS as a platform which you can dynamically scale on demand, and you don't have to worry about cost there, because for machines that are shut off or that are not being in use, there is no billing going on. So if you just want to spin up a whole new test environment for a specific scenario, you just run a script and it will create new images, start those images, run your tests, get the results, and turn it off. Right? So it's a literally on-demand environment. So that is that's one important takeaway. The second one that that is specific to this version of Azure release is it also has an integration with TFS. So if you have a distributed environment of developers, you can use your schemas and maps coming from different developers. You can all put it in one TFS repository and call an automatic build. So I will let Kent talk through that scenario and show some of his demos. Thank you.
Excellent. Is my mic on? Very good. And we will go back to one real quick just to define. Yeah, so as he mentioned, for dev and test is one of the big areas where we see BizTalk and IaaS really making sense. You know, how many people know that you should completely duplicate your production environment and your test environment? So you should have the same number of servers because things can come up. Do you have the same hosts and all that kind of configuration? But how many people actually do? Either you're probably not because you don't want to spend all the money, or you're trying to put two or three environments on one set of servers and run it all at the same time. So with this, you can actually very quickly spin up these environments, as Guru said. Because it's all scriptable with PowerShell, you can create the environment very easily, and then you can turn it off. And what I want to show in the demo is basically continuous integration. So the idea is our BizTalk server farm is there, pre-provisioned, ready to go, but it's quiet, it's not charging. When you check in code, it's going to wake it up. So it's going to be an automated build. It's going to wake up the BizTalk farm. It's going to deploy the bits. It's going to run unit tests, and then it's going to shut down the farm. So that might take 15, 20 minutes instead of 24 hours. So obviously that would be valuable. Okay, so what I have here is just in my MSDN account, I've got all these servers. So it actually takes a little bit of work to get a full farm running in Windows Azure. So you need a domain controller, you need a network, and you need obviously SQL and BizTalk and a build server, and I'll talk about that. So there's a set of scripts. I'm not going to run through these or go through them, but you can go back last year. Stephen Thomas, he's one of the MVPs, he kind of put together this set of PowerShell scripts. And you can pretty much push a button and, you know, you'll get it. And if I just did one server, but you can do multiple BizTalk servers. So it walks through setting up the network, you know, the subdomains and all that, and putting everything, setting up the primary domain controller, all the BizTalk accounts. And then there's actually a bug right now, but he's going to fix it, between him and Microsoft, in terms of the multi-node. So actually not just setting up the servers, but actually fully provisioning. So, you know, one click and you've got a farm ready to go. So what I'm going to do now is, you know, in the scenarios, I'm going to go and be the developer. So the developer's going to go, and pretty much we're going to have a project in TFS online or Visual Studio online. And in this case, this particular machine isn't even joined to the main. So this might be a consultant, somebody that's working on the West Coast when you're on the East Coast. He's able to go and work on his code, check into to Visual Studio online. And then the idea is that, as I mentioned, once he does that, we'll get an automatic build. So I just wanted to look at a few of the pieces. There are too many pieces here to go over it all, but I just wanted to touch on some of the highlights to make this possible. So it turns out the Visual Studio Online doesn't let you do some of the customizations that BizTalk needs to do a full build. So what you end up having to do is you create your own build server, and I did that as a virtual machine running in IaaS, and you connect that up with TFS Online, with Visual Studio Online. So when you check in, you actually see here, if you go to my defaults, my build controller is actually this image that I've built out there, rather than hosted, which would be TFS Online building it, but it doesn't know about BizTalk. So we're able to configure it. So then basically the other piece is BTDF. I don't know if anybody knows what that is, BizTalk Deployment Framework. And so that's got all the basically MS Build specialized tasks to basically take all the components of a BizTalk project, be able to deploy them, turn it into an MSI so you can just install it. So that's just a couple of the pieces that you need to build this continuous integration environment. So what I'm going to do, and then I went and defined, you know, a custom a build definition. And so, but actually this is, if we look at this, it's set up so that as soon as I check in, it's going to kick off. So what I can do, so I can just go and look at this deployment as an example, and I'll just make some kind of non-important test, you know, change. And so as I check in the code, then I can go back here to Server Explorer. I'm sorry. Okay, so say there's some some code. So then I come back over here to builds. And you can see it's already kicked this off. So it's off and running on the other server, ready to go. And so then I'm just going to bring up the other server. This is my build server. And so what I can look at is, first of all, look at, so this is my build directory. So it's already done the build. And if I go up here, you'll see I've got an MSI I can go and install. I've got a batch file that can push that out. The other thing that I worked on is BizUnit. Has anybody worked with that? So the idea of being able to do in-unit kind of automated unit tests. So we set up BizUnit on this. That's not yet plugged in, but there's going to be a blog post explaining all this. So right now I'll just run that as a manual batch file.
Blog post is that actually?
So let's see, if I go here and I run this batch file here, which is just, what it's doing is just using the console version of InUnit and saying run those tests in that context. And so rather than, because this will happen on the back end on a server, it won't be a user looking at the green lights, but I'll be able to go and look into a directory here and see, okay, here's the results of the test, it ran or not. Actually, it looks like it failed. It's the first time in a long time it usually passes. So something failed. But so then you'd get an email coming out to all the developers that somebody broke the build.
Build succeeded.
Yeah, the build succeeded, but the test failed. So I have it set up. You can set up that way where if the test failed, then the build failed. In this case, I didn't set it up that way, but you have that option. So that's pretty much it. As I said, in addition to these scripts, there's also scripts to turn things on and off. So Stephen called them save money and spend money. You know, so turn on your server farm and turn it off. And so that can also be hooked into the build deployment, task. So after you've done your build, you run your test, you can shut down the server, the whole farm, and save money. I just want to show one more, put a shameless plug real quick for a tool that I'm working on at Nimbo. And it'll just take a second. So this is a tool that basically, a lot of times we see people signing up for Azure and then starting up a lot of VMs and then forgetting they're there or they're running all night and they charge up a bill. So we just basically have a way to organize your VMs, look at set budgets and kind of see your budget, how you're doing on that. And then on a particular budget, you can a particular environment, you can go down and actually see, okay, I had a schedule set that went here, but somebody left the server on all night, that ran up a bill. You can kind of project out and say, well, I'm going to be on track for the month or I'm not. You can stop and start. So it's a cool tool. So if that sounds interesting to you in your dev environment, talk to me afterwards. And with that, cool. I'll hand it off.
Thank you.
Yes. So
the power scripts that we're publishing here will be made available as Bistro Gallery image itself so that anybody can download that and manage it for your environment. So it is not publicly made available yet, but when we publish 2013 R2 image, we will also publish those scripts. So the next one that we wanted to show is the hybrid scenarios that are possible. So we're showing three different possible ways of connecting for your enterprise data with external applications. It's not necessarily cloud applications with any external entities. So how do we do that? So the first part is to say, hey, how do I bring the cloud to the enterprise? Rather than taking my enterprise data to the cloud, is there a way for me to bring the capabilities of the cloud to the enterprise? And this is a very different look at the problem because we are telling that, hey, I'm not moving anything from my on-prem systems away to the cloud for a variety of reasons. Something could be, some of these reasons could be compliance reasons or geopolitical reasons that you may not be able to lift and shift. But I just want to be able to connect to my system and not make any changes here. So for that, let's talk about the evolving enterprise infrastructure here. So I'm going to introduce you to my good friend Santosh. Just earlier this week in TechEd, we announced a new functionality called Bistock Hybrid Connections. And Santosh has been the PM championing all of this, so I would love him to have the honors.
historically, if you've looked at the model of the enterprise network, you generally have this notion where you could put in all of your infrastructure on your corporate network. You know, you had your server farms, your web servers, your databases, everything on one network, and you could sandbox them in a DMZ and lock everything up. Now, you know, as the economics of, you know, the driver of all of this, of cloud computing going down all the way, you have multiple options at this stage, right? You could deploy SQL databases into Azure, you could have VMs, you could have everything from your Worker and web roles and even Azure Active Directory. And, you know, you have your other assets such as websites and mobile services. And all of this comes together in a great way. And, you know, if you want to build hybrid applications, you can set up your virtual networks and, you know, set up your VPN infrastructure and even use, you know, Service Bus or Azure Qs in order to build these hybrid scenarios. But however, there are some very key use cases where, you know, if you look at, for example, Azure websites, you know, there's not a really simple and easy way for, you know, for it to access data on-prem, primarily because, you know, you could end up using Qs and Service Bus, but not every scenario requires that, right? There are some very simple solutions where you actually would like to set up connectivity. And, you know, how do you go about doing that? And that's why we came up with the need for this form of hybrid connectivity, where, you know, there are compliance reasons, security reasons, where you want to keep all of your data on-prem, but, you know, the easiest way is to provide this very simple tunnel. And the application can access only the resource that it really wants to. So, you know, if you look at the stuff that we are providing at this stage, move forward. I think this is for your slide, right? Yeah, there you go. Okay. So the hybrid connections is a simple, fast, and easy way to build your hybrid application. And what we're going to enable primarily in this preview that we're launching this week is the ability to connect Azure websites and mobile services to these on-prem resources. The main key access point that we have here is that given that we're allowing data to be or requests to be entering inside the corporate network, we want to make sure that the enterprise IT has full control and visibility into what's going on. And then finally, of course, this is a feature of the new Azure BizTalk services. We are also introducing BizTalk services free tier this week, and that's going to provide you exclusive access to the hybrid connections feature for developers to try this out. So with that in mind, let me just quickly jump over and give you an idea of how this works. So you know, you have your corporate act server, and let's say if there's a SQL server or any other published resource that I want to access, and I have my Azure website. The way that this is going to work is that you're going to spin up a hybrid connection, and you're going to specify the address, the on-premise address, the host name and the port on which the server is located, the resource you're trying to access, and you spin up this hybrid connection manager. It's a connector that we provide you. It's a single-click experience that you can download, install, and configure it in, all in one click. And once you've done that, it discovers the hybrid connection that you intended to connect. It also, because you specified this information in the Azure portal, it will find the server that you are trying to target, and the website will connect to it. And this is all like a simple integrated flow that we provide, and of course mobile services would do the same. So with that, I'm just going to quickly jump into a demo and show you how this works. I don't, given the interest of time here, I'm not going to drill deep into this. We have a session dedicated to this that's coming up right after this. It's at 1 p.m. It's in the Hilton Ballroom C, or on the Hilton side. So do join us there if you, right. Okay, so I'm going to switch gears. Okay. Right, so here's my, what I have here is, this is, by the way, a sneak peek into a demo I'm going to do in a little more detail in the next session. So let's look at this. I mean, this is a simple visitors app. I'm going to just go ahead and publish this to Azure, right? So as I publish this, wireless here, maybe a little flaky. Ah, okay, it did come back. That's good. Right, so I'm going to publish this to Azure, and I'm going to go ahead while it's publishing. I'm going to visit the website on Azure before it comes up. Right. So I have my website here. Now, if you're not familiar, this is the new Azure portal. It's in preview, but the hybrid connection experience is integrated into this experience. And what you're looking at here is on the left here is the blade that describes the overall my Azure infrastructure. Oops, I think that it kicked off the website because it got deployed. Right, so I'm going to close this for a second. Okay, so I'm going to go and to the website, and I'm going to create a hybrid connection. And I do that by specifying the name of the resource that I want to connect to. And that's simply a SQL Server that's actually running in my office back in Redmond, right? It's on the Microsoft corporate network. Now, this website that I provisioned, it's actually in the US West data center for Azure, while the server I'm going to access is going to be over there. So I'm going to call this, visitors DB, let's say, because that's the database that I want to access. That's the name I'm going to give to the connection. The host name is Sundarshi AW, because that's the SQL Server name. And the port on which SQL connects is the default port here, which is 1433. Now, you'll see here is the BizTalk service instance that I have to select, because this feature, as I mentioned, is a feature of Azure BizTalk services. I already have one provisioned, so I'm not going to spend the time here to provision one for you. But if you didn't have one, you could actually go and create one right here from the portal as well, from the website's experience, right? And as I mentioned, we introduced a free tier, which is shown over here, right? So let's close these blades that I don't need. Okay, and I'm just going to go ahead and create my hybrid connection. Now, the connection should show up. There it is. But it's not yet fully connected, because all I've really done is, in abstract, specified that I have the intent to connect to the SQL Server from this website. So let's actually go and wire this up, and let's see how hard that is. So I'm actually going to TS into my SQL Server, yes. So this is the Sundarshi AW, as I mentioned, was the server name, MySQL Server on-prem. And over here, I think it's timed out. Sorry. Waiting for a demo for half an hour, sometimes this happens. All right, so I have to log back in. Hopefully it's will pick up my credentials back again. Yeah, not quite. All right. Actually, why don't I do this? Okay. Oh, it's coming up anyway. Yeah, I was about to go there. So let me actually go ahead and show you this in the BizTalk Services portal, because you've already seen the website's experience, right? So I'm going to show you this, the BizTalk side of this, given the audience here. I think that's kind of appropriate. All right. So actually, here my connection should show up shortly. So here's the BizTalk service. HC-free was the one that I provisioned, and visitors DB was the name of the hybrid connection. And I clicked on on-premises setup in the bottom taskbar, and it says install and configure. And there you go. I just click on this, and it asks me whether I want to run this. I do. And it verifies that the source of the file that came from Microsoft elevates, and that's it. So the beauty of this thing is that, given that I was already logged into the Azure portal and it knew the connection, It also, all of this information lived in Azure, where I'd already hooked it up and wired it up to the Azure website. And I'd already specified what database I wanted to connect to and so on. So it's actually going to, it has discovered all of this information with a few clicks, right? And now it's telling me that the whole connection is fully set up now all the way. And that's it. I now have a full working connection right from my Azure website down to a SQL server that is running on-prem. And I'm going to prove this to you. Now if you go and look at the visitors DB, hybrid connection on the Azure website is telling me that the website is connected to the SQL server, right? All right, let me just close this for a second. And I'm going to browse to the website now, right? So I'm going to browse here. Now, I don't want to, again, go through I'm going to go into the no-auth mode because that was one of the options that this website provides. Now, the website, here's the interesting part. This is, by the way, is now talking to SQL Azure because that's the way we had it set up for the keynote demo. Scott Hanselman was doing this, right? So if you see his name on top, right? Okay. So I'm going to go into the Kudu console, which, by the way, is a fantastic feature if you guys have not tried it out for Azure websites, because you can on the fly edit the code that's running on the website. All right. All you have to do is like append SCM over here at the top after the website name. And I'm going to actually go ahead and open the PowerShell, and I'm going to browse to the folder of the website, and I'm going to edit the web config. And if you look at my SQL connection string down here, I'm going to highlight this text. Hopefully, you guys can see this. It refers to some database.windows.net domain, which is the SQL Azure domain. And it's telling me that it's actually connected to a SQL Azure website, which is how the thing was. But I want to connect to my SQL server, which is running on my corporate network, right? OK, so let's do that. So here's the connection string for that. I'm just going to stick it right in here. Did I get it right? Yeah, I did. OK. All right, so now the data source is my SQL server. I have some test database in the catalog. And I'm going to hit save. Okay. All right. We'll give it a few seconds for it to take effect. And I'm going to just refresh this page. Actually, wait, I got to remove that hash. Yikes. Oh. Oh. I can actually prove that it worked because it was actually trying to load my profile, instead of Scott Hanselman's. And you can see that actually I don't have, it didn't find the image for me, and it failed over there. But the exception will actually show you that it came from the SQL server, right? In the interest of time, I'm going to show here, but this exception, given that the profiles actually load from the database, and it actually tries to find who the user is, and in this context, the enterprise user is me, Santoshi, and it's actually trying to tell you that it was trying to find my image in order to show at the top, and that's how you got that exception, right? So that's a different path. I don't have the time to actually fix it right away. I want to hand the time back because we're already behind schedule. But to see more about this and to actually, I promise, actually see this fully working end to end, I do join us in the next session at 1 p.m. As I said, it's in the Hilton Ballroom. It's called Announcing Hybrid Connections. We look forward to seeing you there. Thank you.
About connecting from a website to your on-prem system. But there, the scenario was like you had a website which had a direct connection string connecting to an on-prem system. That may not be always true, where you might want to do some transformation or you may want to do some managed access to your on-prem system. So what we have, what I have here is about connecting from BizTalk services to an on-prem system using something called as BizTalk adapter services. So these adapter services runs on-prem on your premise under the scope of your web server, internet information server, as a WebSocket proxy. So I will show you a quick demo of what can be done here. So I'm getting data from my service bus queue, doing some transformation to that, and sending it to an on-prem system. So the experience for the developer for that is like within Visual Studio, you see these BizTalk adapter services, and you see these various on-premise connections. And in this case, I want to just do a SQL Server. Let me do add SQL Server. You get a nice-looking wizard where you just walk through that wizard and say my SQL Server name is local SQL Server. And the instance that I want to connect is SQL Express. And the database that I want to connect is orders. So that is right here. This is the name of my server, this is my instance, and this is the name of my database. If I connect to that, I'm using my Windows credentials. So it has established a connection. This is still running on-prem on your developer machine. It shows that these are the various artifacts that you have in SQL Server. You have a table called order details. And for that table, you can do an insert, delete, update, or a select. I'm going to do an insert and click next. So what it is going to do behind the scene is actually it's generating a WCF proxy with a schema reference to that one. So let me just use a Windows credential for this and just show you what it's already created. So once it is already created, it allows you to generate these schemas that are pertinent to that SQL insert. So now, once again, just like we saw with the JSON wizard, now that I have a schema, I can use it anywhere in BizTalk. Right? So what we have done that is we have used that in the context of BizTalk Bridge, which we will talk about later in the day at 2 o'clock in Vinay's session. We have a detailed session of how this bridge works. So you just need to drag and drop that LOB system here, and it allows you to configure connectivity to that. So in this case, I have connected it from a service bus source to an on-prem system. So let me just post a message to that service bus queue. So here I am posting two orders, item 201 and 202. And it is going to post to that service bus queue from which BizTalk service will pick it up and send it to your on-prem SQL Server. So a project which cannot be started. Oh, okay. This one? And pass test. Okay. So now if I go back to my SQL Server, and earlier I had 20 rows. Now if I do a run, still have 20 rows. Come on. Completed, right? Was it already done? Whatever. So the new items will be inserted back into this table. So what it is doing is just it is getting that request into service bus queue, from service bus queued is Bistalk service is picking it up, doing a transformation of that message and sending it to this WCF proxy running on your server. So that WCF proxy in turn is connecting to your SQL server to do that update. So this is slightly different from the one that the previous scenario of hybrid connections. In case of hybrid connections, your SQL server itself was being directly accessed from an Azure connectivity. Right? So there is a hybrid connections manager that is running on Azure that is having a proxy class running here that opens up the tunnel for you. So now the third scenario that you could think of is I'm not trying to connect to that, but I want to expose my on-prem systems to an external system. So if you have a full-blown Bistalk server running on-prem, there it is not just about exposing your SQL server or your SAP server, but there is a business process associated with that. You want to expose that business process in a selective way as a managed service that can be accessed in different credentials under different contexts by external applications. Like, let's say if you want to access your business process running on your SAP system from your mobile application, which is a very common scenario these days. So how do I make that managed access available? So I don't want to change anything in my SAP system, nor do I want to change my business process, but I want to provide a layer in front that allows my mobile application to talk to it using JSON connectivity. SAP is not going to talk to JSON. So how am I going to do that? So you put Bistalk server in there, which manages that business process and exposes itself as a RESTful web service. And that RESTful web service has an endpoint available on Azure. So your mobile applications are connecting to that Azure application, Azure endpoint, which is highly available. So you don't have to worry about provisioning reverse proxy and those kind of things. So this Azure endpoint is the one that is relaying back that information, coming from your mobile request back to your Bistalk server, which connects to your SAP and get back the response, right? So the availability of this Azure endpoint and connectivity, that seamless connectivity to that, is the third scenario. Unfortunately, due to lack of time, we are not able to show that, but we will make those demos available on the video as a download at a later time. All right? Thank you all.